Hey, Tim, it's always a pleasure to be with you, and I'm just really just tickled to death to find out that you're still plugging along after all this time.
Let's get it started in here.
And the bass keeps running, running. Banal of America.
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 Woo!
Audio.
In this context, there's no disrespect, so when I bust my rhyme.
We talk about the $1 trillion conspiracy. First off, I'll cut you and your listeners in on a little secret. That was not my original title, okay? My original title was Zombie Nation. Do we get thoughtful, intellectual discourse in the mass media? No. We get Lady Gaga wearing meat. God, you know, where the hell are we? If they keep pushing this through, you're going to have to go to a doctor and pay for a doctor's call just to get a prescription so you can get some vitamin C.
Should be front page news.
Should be front page news, and yet there's not a word. Lose control, a body, a soul. Because, folks, it's meant to be that way. Somebody somewhere wants it that way. If they didn't want it that way, it wouldn't be that way. And it's not like I'm pro-Bush and anti-Obama.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
I'm anti-New World Order, mm-hmm. and the New World Order controls them both. And now before anybody starts going, oh, no, no, more conspiracy theory, oh, you know, blah, blah, blah. Let me just point out, and you just keep doing your good job, Tim. I'm behind you 100%. This is the topics that you never hear discussed in the corporate mass media.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
What is going on, my friends? This is Tim Banal of banalofamerica.com with the season premiere of BOA Audio Season 6. We are about to embark on yet another year of Banal of America Audio. We have got a slew of seriously mind-bending episodes on tap for you over the next few weeks and months, starting with this week's season premiere, featuring, of course, our good friend, Gentleman Jim Mars. Before we kick off the festivities for this year's season premiere, I want to take a moment and remember former BOA Audio guest Betty Mailer. She was, of course, the founder and president of the UFO Society of Ireland and was featured here on BOA Audio way back in season 4. I was just completely stunned and saddened in a big way by the passing of Betty Mailer in mid-October. Took me totally by surprise and made me think back to that episode with some fond memories. She was a one-of-a-kind character, just full of zest, really is the best way to put it. I highly encourage folks to go back and check out that edition of BOA Audio featuring the late Betty Mailer. I had so much fun talking to her. She was unforgettable. And so, of course, we want to extend our condolences and thoughts and prayers to the friends and family of Betty over there in Ireland and around the world. And we want to dedicate BOA Audio Season 6 to the late Betty Mailer. Unfortunately, we say it a lot here at the beginning of the program when we've lost a former BOA Audio guest, but it bears repeating. Let's take solace in the fact that Betty Mailer is most likely still out there somewhere in some form, and her journey continues, and she's finding out the answers to the questions we ponder here on the program all the time. So I hope she enjoys the ride wherever it leads, but she is going to be certainly missed down here as well. From that somber note, let's turn the mood around to something a little bit more celebratory. As we get down to business on the reason why you're all here in the first place, talking about the season premiere of BOA Audio Season 6. You don't need me to tell you too much about the guest, because here it is, our sixth year of the program. We're, of course, talking to the man who has become synonymous with each new season of the program, the venerable Jim Mars. In this year's season premiere, we're going to talk about his new book, The $1 trillion Conspiracy, How the New World Order, Man-Made Diseases, and Zombie Banks Are Destroying America. fascinating read that really covers a whole bunch of different areas that aren't really a part of the previous Jim Mars canon of investigation. We'll delve into the agenda behind the current financial crisis, the emerging New World Order, pandemics, big pharma, issues with the food industry, global warming, Codex Alimentarius, the Federal Reserve, and the Council on Foreign Relations, how to fix the mess that America finds itself in, and, of course, much, much more. Then we'll find out about the parts of the book that Jim had censored by the publishers. Yes, there is material that was not allowed in the trillion-dollar conspiracy, and you're going to find out about that here on the season premiere of BOA Audio. Plus, since it is our annual conversation with Jim Mars, we'll talk about the last year in ufology and get his thoughts on where he sees the UFO phenomenon going as we close out 2010. So, in total, it is a remarkable conversation here that covers a wealth of periphery areas in the world of conspiracy research, as I said, that had not previously been discussed by Jim in his many outstanding books leading up to this one. And you don't want to hear me yakking any longer. You've been waiting way too long as it is. Given that this is Jim's sixth appearance on the program, you really don't need me to go over the official bio one more time. The books that either you should own or be ordering or have read are Crossfire, The Plot That Killed Kennedy, Alien Agenda, Rule by Secrecy, Psi Spies, The Terror Conspiracy, and Rise of the Fourth Reich. I can't put over, of course, Rule by Secrecy enough. That's the one that started me on my journey of investigation into the esoteric. That's why we feature Jim Mars here on the program every season to kick off another year of BOA Audio. He laid the foundation for this entire enterprise, and thus he does every year on the show as well. His website is www.jimmars.com, JIMMARRS.com, and the latest book is The Trillion Dollar Conspiracy, How the New World Order, Man-Made Diseases, and Zombie Banks Are Destroying America. Check it out. With all that said, folks, let's get down to business and rock and roll. The wait is over. BOA Audio Season 6 starts now. This interview was recorded on November 4th, 2010. Jim Mars joins us for the season premiere of BOA Audio Season 6. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the season premiere of BOA Audio Season 6. I can't believe it. We're already kicking off our sixth year of the program, and as anybody who's been listening to the show long enough knows, we always start the season off with this week's guest. This man inspired me to investigate the esoteric from the very beginning with his amazing book, Rule by Secrecy, and ever since then, I've pretty much just devoured every book that he's come out with over the last decade or so at this point. It's been quite a long run here so far. And this past summer, he released his latest book, The Trillion Dollar Conspiracy, How the New World Order, Man-Made Diseases, and Zombie Banks Are Destroying America. He is a superstar beyond superstars in the world of esoterica and the parapolitics paranormal scene. He is, of course, investigative reporter Jim Mars. Welcome back to BOA Audio, Jim. Thank you once again for helping us kick off another season of Banal of America Audio.
Hey, Tim, it's always a pleasure to be with you, and I'm just tickled to death to find out that you're still plugging along after all this time.
Thank you very much, sir. I really appreciate it, and it's a testament to guys like you who keep coming back and helping us to establish this program for what it is. Now, the new book, I love it. It is amazing. I finished it yesterday. In a way, because last year, I think when we talked, you had the fiction book coming out, so you sort of had taken a step back from the scene a little bit as far as contemporary stuff goes. So in a way, I got the feeling this book was kind of like how the world has gone to hell in a handbasket since you last heard from me.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. And of course, I just had to jump back into the reality, what's really going on, and the trillion-dollar conspiracy, not only covers the financial meltdown, who caused it, and things like liar's loans and the incredible bundling and derivative aspects, which has just wrecked our economy. But it also gets into bad food and water, Codex Alimentarius. If you don't know what that is, you better find out, because if they keep pushing this through, you're going to have to go to a doctor and pay for a doctor's call just to get a prescription so you can get some vitamin C. Biological weapons, how that they created a biological weapon known as a mycoplasma. This is probably one of, if not the cause of Gulf War syndrome, and now it's behind a whole variety of so-called modern diseases that nobody had ever heard of 20 years ago, like fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And of course, they are trying to say, well, here, we'll vaccinate you against all this. And yet the studies and what's coming out more and more is that the vaccinations themselves are the problem. Let's face it, last year about this time, we were all scared to death of swine flu. Well, whatever happened to that, man? I mean, just, yeah, that was kind of a nothing deal, and yet everybody took the vaccination. And now they're having other kinds of problems. We got, and part of the problem is our dumbed-down education system. And it all goes back to the one man who helped create the foundation of our modern education apparatus, John D. Rockefeller, who was quoted as saying, well, I don't want a nation of thinkers, I want a nation of workers. And, of course, and then that's also led, we're also led around by the incredibly tight media, mass media control. There's like five corporations that control, and they all have interlocking boards of directors. So you got a handful of media moguls who are deciding everything we see and hear. Okay, do we get thoughtful intellectual discourse in the mass media? No, we get Lady Gaga wearing meat. God, you know, where in the hell are we? And of course, when you try to do something about this, then they clamp down, and we're rapidly moving into a police state. Except it's worse than the police. This is turning into a martial law state. We have a law in this country which nobody seems to be aware of, called Posse Comitatus. It was passed in 1870, and it came about because of the excesses of Reconstruction, and everybody said this is ridiculous because so many of the southern states were under martial law, and they said this is intolerable. So they passed Posse Comitatus, which states the U.S. military cannot be used to police the civilian population. A very, very smart separation of powers here between the government and the people. And yet, we are just progressively doing away with that. 9/11, everybody saw the troops in the airport. Oh, that's okay. Drugs, now we got the Coast Guard and the military fighting drugs. Well, you know, that seemed reasonable at the time. But it just, you know, it's just the slow creep of totalitarianism.
Exactly, yeah. It never goes back to, they just keep stepping
back
a little bit
never
over the line and keep going forward, further and further. Yeah, I was going to say, you kind of nailed it here, because in my notes I wanted to stress, you know, the book not just covers the economy, but also, as Jim said, food, biowarfare, big pharma, education, privacy, the media. So a whole bunch of areas that I'd never seen you cover before, you know, except maybe tangentially and some other stuff, really get the in-depth treatment here in the book. So Jim Morris fans definitely want to pick this one up for all new insights into a whole bunch of different areas.
You know, Tim, here's a new thing, too. As you know, in most of my past books, I'm trying to detail here's what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what's gone astray of what, society we should be living in. Well, this one, at the end, I actually present here's some things we could do about it.
Absolutely, yeah.
And another thing, we talk about the $1 trillion conspiracy. First off, I'll cut you and your listeners in on a little secret. That was not my original title, okay? My original title was Zombie Nation.
Yeah, I was going to mention that because zombies is a big, you know, the concept, I guess you could say, of zombies is a big theme in the book, which was a surprise to me. And I'm sure, like, let's extrapolate on that because obviously, as you just said, it was a big part of what you had in mind going into it. So I guess, you know, flesh out this zombie thing.
Okay. Well, the thing is, I mean, of course, the zombies, you know, with let's eat your brains. That's kind of a popular fad, so I latched onto that. But you know, there is some validity to the comparison. We're told that banks, which hold more liabilities than assets, in other words, they owe more money than they've got. They're broke, but they're propped up with TARP money, and so they're called zombie banks. Okay, because they're dead, but they're still going through the motions thanks to taxpayer money. Mm-hmm. Well, it's been estimated that if every American sold every asset they've got, it would total no more than maybe $10 trillion. And yet today, depending on who you listen to, collectively, we owe in this country between $12 and $15 trillion.
Jeez.
In other words, we're broke, but we're still going through the motions, so we're a zombie nation, and I think it holds together. And when we're bantering around the number of trillion, oh, a trillion, now we got a trillion here, and we sent a trillion over there, and we got $1 trillion going, you know, Ben Bernanke, the chairman of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System, before Congress, they were asking about these credit swaps, where they sent trillions of U.S. tax dollars overseas to foreign banks. And they said, well, wait a minute, you know, what kind of collateral did they give us? Which banks got all this money, and what are they using it for? And he says, well, you know, Federal Reserve System, it's a private banking system. It really has no direct connection to the government, and that's proprietary information, and so I'm not going to tell you that. So they send our trillions of our money overseas, and then they won't even tell us what happened to it. Are we a zombie nation or what? Now, let's think about a trillion real quick, and just to give you an idea of what a trillion is. 1 trillion is probably a number that is just beyond any of our real comprehension. 1 trillion square miles, 1 trillion square miles would be 3.7 million states the size of Texas.
Wow.
Wow. That's just unimaginable.
Yeah.
And yet, that's the kind of money that they're sucking out of this country. Now, Tim, let's think about it in the most basic form here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Are there still plenty of resources in the United States? Yes. We've got good farmland. We've got mineral resources. We've got, you know, a wonderful country here.
Yeah.
Now, what about the American people? Well, okay, despite being dumbed down and turned into couch potatoes of a television and mesmerized and being led around like sheep, nevertheless, there is a public education system. And by the time most people are grown, they at least have a pretty good ability to read and write. So we have a reasonably educated workforce, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So we got an educated workforce. We're rich in mineral resources and other resources. Why are we in such bad economic straits? We should be prosperous, right?
Absolutely.
Well, we're the way we are. We're in such economic straits. The dollar, you know, prices are going up. Inflation's going up. The dollar's worth less and less and less because, folks, it's meant to be that way. Somebody somewhere wants it that way. If they didn't want it that way, it wouldn't be that way. We have the potential in this country to be a wealthy, prosperous country as we were for the first 200 years of our existence. So why are we in such problems today? Because they have divided and conquered. They have divided and conquered our society. And today, there's, you know, there's nobody who says, oh, I'm glad to be an American. No, man, you're either a conservative or a liberal or a Democrat or a Republican or a male or a female or a heterosexual or a homosexual or a Jew or a Christian or a Catholic or a Protestant. Or, I mean, anything, yeah. Anything. to divide us and conquer us. And we're falling for it. That's the sad part.
Yeah, that is, that's for sure. So I guess from what you're saying here, to sort of like put it in 9/11 terms, the economic collapse, unlike what they're, you know, saying in the media, which is, you know, that it was quasi-accidental as a result of, you know, avarice, this is more of a lie-hop situation or a my-hop situation where, you know, they let it happen or made it happen. I guess you're kind of saying they made it happen.
Well, they admit to it. For example, the Great Depression of the 30s, which began with the stock market crash in 29, again, to quote Ben Bernanke, he says, yeah, we did it. We're sorry. Okay. So, you know, 75 years later, they'll say, yeah, we did it. 75 years from now, everybody will understand. Just like right now, you remember all the controversy in 2000 over the hanging chads and the vote count in Florida and the appointment by the Supreme Court and all that controversy over the selection of 2000. And, oh, it was a big controversy then. Well, today, nobody really pays attention to this. Nobody cares anymore.
Yeah.
But today, it's been firmly established Al Gore won the election. Okay? I mean, that's not a guess or a conspiracy theory. That's a fact. But he didn't get to be president, did he?
No.
So, you know, we're going to have to wait another 20, 30 years, and then we'll find out that this economic squeeze that we're in right now is totally manipulated and originated with what is with the new term they've come up with, the banksters, you know, which is a combination of gangster and banker. So, and they're admitting to it.
Yeah.
But nobody's paying attention to that because they control the mass media. And they will never, just like a classic example, one of the founding controversies in this country was whether or not we wanted to have a central bank. Well, Thomas Jefferson and all the freedom-loving people realized, because of the experience of the European nations, that when you have a central bank, the central bank pretty much runs the show because you're going to become indebted to it, and then it starts calling the shots, and the bank will run the country. So they said, no, we don't need a central bank. Alexander Hamilton, on the other hand, some of the rich guys said, well, come on now, we got to have rich people handling the money because they know how to handle money because they're rich, okay?
Yeah.
And that was a huge controversy. And they tried the old Bank of the United States and the Bank of America, these central banks, and every time there was corruption, there was criminal activity, the economy sank, confiscating people's farms and homes, and so they'd do away with it, and then they'd create another one. And finally, about 1832, when Andrew Jackson, the first Westerner to become president of the United States, and he called these international bankers a den of vipers, and he ended the central bank. And that lasted until 1913, when on a Christmas Eve, with mostly Congress people out of town and not really thinking about congressional business, they slipped through the Federal Reserve Act and created the Federal Reserve, which is neither federal nor has any reserves. It just prints money and then loans this paper money to the government at face value. It's amazing, and nobody seems to catch on. And when they do, they can't seem to do anything about it. We've had the Fed now since 1913, and almost every session of Congress, somebody's calling for an audit, and yet it has never been audited. You can't find out what they're doing with your money. I mean, how many people would put up with that in their personal life? You're going to hand over all your money to, say, some neighbor, and the neighbor won't tell you what he's doing with it or where it goes or anything else. I mean, it's insane, but that's the way it works, and that's where we find ourselves. And it's time that people wake up and start trying to regain control over the country that they, the republic that they were given.
Absolutely, yeah. Seems everything's gotten out of control. Go ahead.
Absolutely, and of course, you never heard anybody refer to the Federal Reserve System as the central bank until about, 10 years ago, maybe a little more. And then just all of a sudden, in the media, they go, well, the central bank today announced, new interest rates, blah, blah, blah. Well, wait a minute. When did we ever vote for a central bank? We didn't want one. We never had one. We tried to get rid of it, and all of a sudden we got one. And in fact, if you go back and study the inception of the Federal Reserve System, you'll find that the bankers who created it were very specific in their secret meetings. They said, we must never refer to it as a central bank. And they didn't until after so many generations had come along that had totally lost the concept of a central bank and what it could do to them. And then just blithely, then they just began to say, yeah, well, the central bank today. And we got it. And we didn't even know what we got. It's amazing, Tim.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Now, to look at this like on a geopolitical level, and then in comparison to the current economic situation, you hear all the time when they were bailing out the banks and everything that the banks and the other companies and stuff were too big to fail. And then you get almost the impression that really, if you pull the camera back a little bit, it's more like it's America that's teetering on failure, and it's too big to fail, so we have to keep propping it up. But based on sort of what I got from the book, it seems like really the end game plan here is to fail. That's their goal.
We're being set up for failure, and there's a purpose in this because, you know, you always hear about the New World Order, which is really actually not new, and there's not much order to it. In fact, you know, you can all go all the way back to Adolf Hitler, who talked about a New World Order. And the biggest stumbling block to this New World Order, and okay, let's stop and explain. Here's what they mean by New World Order. I think it was actually laid out back in 1948 by a British Fabian socialist by the name of Eric Arthur Blair. And he wrote a book in that year of 1948, and he transposed the numbers, and he published this book entitled 1984, and he used the pen name George Orwell. But now, Eric Arthur Blair, being a socialist, I think he, and being well connected to the British aristocracy and the royals, I think he had a true understanding of what the game plan was. And if you go back and reread 1984, you find that the wealthy elite have divided the world into three predominant economic blocks. In the book, it's called Oceania, Asiana, and East Asiana. Okay, today, they're working hard to actually make that real. In today's real world, we have the European Union, which is in existence and is already drawing controversy and criticism from its own members. And then the soon-to-be North American Union, where they're going to blend the economies of Canada, Mexico, and the United States. And they're well along on this plan, although they just hadn't quite called it that yet. And then at some future date, there will be the Asian unions. And that's going to be easy enough to form because most of the Asian nations are just pyramid power. You got a dictator or a family or a handful of people at the top ruling everything, and everybody else is just, you know, peons. And so that'll be easy enough because you just take the ruling people and you buy them out, or you put them on your board, and then you got control of the Asian nations and you've got an Asian union. So the stumbling block actually has been the United States. Why? Well, because we have a tradition of individual freedom and liberty. And two, we have the legal foundation for this individual freedom and liberty, which is the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And third, we got guns. So we're in a position to enforce our freedom and liberty. So they had to destroy us. They have to get this roadblock out of the way so they can create their three-part world globalist socialist system. And why do they want socialism? Well, wait a minute. We're talking about these rich, wealthy Wall Street bankers and City of London bankers. You know, why would they want socialism? Because communism was socialism. Communism is the exact opposite of capitalism, right?
Yeah.
Well, not really, okay? Because here's the thing. Under any social program, no matter how benevolent it may sound, it always requires central administration. You've got to have a central authority to run a effective social program. And the wealthy elite, the plutocrats, know that they have the power and the wealth that they can buy up the central authority and thereby rule the world.
Yeah.
But not in the name of despotism and tyranny, but in the name of social equality, where we're all equal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. Here's what people just don't understand. Because socialism, on the one hand, and I've been criticized by some people that say, well, you talk about socialism like it's a bad thing. Well, not really. There are obviously certain social programs that are necessary in a benevolent society. All right, there are always old people, infirm people that need to be taken care of by society, and there should be, and there are programs to do this, but they can get out of hand. But the main problem with socialism is that when you try to socialize everyone and make everyone equal, then you are creating a ambitionless society.
Yeah.
And I think this was quite shown effectively by a college professor his class on political science, they were arguing back and forth about socialism, and he says, okay, I'll tell you what. He said, we're going to practice socialism in this class. He said, the next test, he said, I'm just going to average all the grades, and everybody gets the same grade. And everybody kind of looked at each other. So the first test came up, and everybody made a C. All right. Now, the people who had not studied for the test thought that was a really great deal. Hey, good. I've done it. Break sweat. I got a C. But the people who had studied and had made A's and B's on their test, needless to say, they were miffed because they'd studied for an A and a B, and they ended up with a C.
Yeah.
So the second test came along, and everybody made a D.
Yeah, because the ones who studied knew better.
Yeah, because the ones who said, well, why do I need to study when I'm going to end up with a C? You know, so they didn't study, and the thing dropped, and everybody got a D. And on the third test, he flunked the entire class. And that, my friends, is a classic example of socialism at work.
Absolutely, yeah. That's a great story. Wow.
Well, it sounds good. You know, we'll just average out all the grades, and then everybody gets the same grade. You know, that way everybody can feel good about themselves, and you know, we're not going to have any winners, and we're not going to have any losers. You know, and we'll do. It sounds great, but it just doesn't work. Never has.
Now, why do you think the New World Order is intent on sort of molding this world into, you know, a few competing socialist blocks, as you say in the book? Why not just one, you know, I guess, obviously, it really would be one world under their control, but with the perception of this, would the perception of that competition just be, you know, to sort of keep the brainwash going?
It's about profit and control. If it's all just one world government, then, you know, okay, well, that's the government, okay. But if you have the three different blocks, and again, read Orwell's 1984. Two of the blocks are always at war with each other.
Yeah.
And then they will finally either win or lose or make peace, and then they'll turn, and then they'll go to war with the other block. So they're always in conflict. They've got to have the conflict. They don't want a one world government because then there's no conflict. Now, what they want is the conflict between the major blocks, at least the perceived conflict. As you say, they're going to control them all. But they want the perceived conflict for maximizing profit and control. What is the purpose of government anyway? The only true purpose of government, the only real reason for government is for collective defense, for protection, for security.
Yeah.
All right, and that's how, you know, that's why today, no matter what it is, it might be, whether it's the price of beans or the height of your corn, it doesn't matter, it's all national security. All right, because that is the only overreaching claim and defense for our big government, so we can defend you. Well, you know, if it's one world government, then wait a minute, there's no need for that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So they got to have the conflict so that they can keep selling arms, and they can keep maximizing profits and keep people fearful. You know, in by the way, in 1984, if you'll recall, the boogeyman was Goldman. Goldman was behind everything. Of course, they couldn't quite catch Goldman, didn't quite know where he was, wasn't even sure exactly what he looked like, but he was behind everything. He was kind of like Professor Moriarty, right? He was behind everything. Sounds kind of like Osama bin Laden, doesn't it? Who was that? Osama bin who? We've already forgotten about him, haven't we?
Yeah.
In fact, you know, it's actually go all the way back to less than a year after 9/11 attacks. In the spring of 2002, President George W. Bush was asked about bin Laden. He said, well, we haven't heard much from him lately, and frankly, I'm not that concerned about him. Oh well, forget him. Except, wait a minute, here it is 10 years later, and we're still fighting in Afghanistan, where we went to get bin Laden, and we're still fighting in Iraq because, you know, they had something to do with 9/11, or did they? No, wait a minute. Bush said they had nothing to do with 9/11. So I don't know. I missed something there. I'm not sure why we're in Iraq.
We're supposed to be looking for weapons, I thought.
Yeah, we're looking for weapons of mass destruction, which I guess we're still looking. Meanwhile, we're, you know, killing people and destroying places. I don't know. I don't quite get it.
Yeah. Now, what do you make of, here we are, we're talking on November 4th, so we're about 2 days removed from the big election. What do you make of, I guess you could say, the recent flip sort of back to this GOP, at least half the Congress? You know, I get the impression, based on looking at the past, and believe me, I was excited about Obama. I should have known better. I've been in this long enough. I don't know what I must be an idiot, but I obviously now two years in, I'm hip to the game again. And
they should have called me, Tim. I could have warned you. Because, I'll just give you the ball face. Here's the ball face facts of the situation. And this is what people just, I don't understand it. Why they don't get it? From 1989 to 1993, we had the administration, the Republican administration of George Herbert Walker Bush. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, every member of his cabinet, except for Vice President Dan Quayle, who couldn't spell potato, and his old buddy Jim Baker, were members of that secretive globalist organization, the Council on Foreign Relations. Mm-hmm. So that's actually who was in control. But then, from 93 to 2000, we had the Democratic administration of Bill Clinton. Every cabinet member except for Secretary of Defense William Perry was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. But then we shifted, of course, in the selection of 2000 to George W. Bush, and let's look at his cabinet. Dick Cheney, Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, Donald Rumsfeld, Robert Gates, Elaine Chao, Christine Todd Whitman, all members of the Council on Foreign Relations. But in 2008, you know, we all went for change we could believe in. And we got Barack Hussein Obama. All right. Let's look at his cabinet. Robert Gates, Council on Foreign Relations, he's still there. Jan Napolitano, Bill Richardson, Susan Rice, James L. Jones, Timothy Geithner, Larry Summers, Paul Vogner, all Council on Foreign Relations. So what's changed? Nothing.
Yep.
The same rulers have ruled us through both a Democrat and Republican administration. So this whole thing about let's elect a Democrat, let's elect a Republican, it's nonsense. They're both controlled by the same people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I guess I just shut my brain off there for a while. You know, it's better. I guess you can hope for good things to happen because, you know, chances are bad things are going to happen anyway. You know what I mean? So that was the attitude.
But when you look, you know, right away, when you know, if you think, go back to, say, 2006, 2005, you'd never even heard of Barack Hussein Obama.
Yeah.
You never even heard of him. And then all of a sudden, he's a man of the hour. Why, he's the new Messiah. Yeah, he's the guy. Well, you know, when you see something like that, then you do what I do, which is you go and check and find out, who's behind him?
Yeah, Exactly.
And what I found out was is that his key advisors was Zygmunt Brzezinski.
Exactly, yep. Yep.
And head of the Trilateral Commission. And he and David Rockefeller, of course, were big Council on Foreign Relations members, and then they helped branch off and form the Trilateral Commission, which was designed to bring in the Asian economies into their world banking conglomerate. Well, once you understand that Brzezinski is behind Obama and that Henry Kissinger is behind Bush, you realize that the puppet masters never change, just the hand puppets, okay?
Exactly.
It's amazing. It's just, but everybody just keeps, you know, we just keep stampeding along. Why? Because we watch television.
Well, that brings up a good point. So do you think this sort of like flip back was sort of manufactured by the media and sort of spurred on by them to God knows what, create more chaos or sort of change? I feel like there's a change sort of in the style between the two parties, even though the people behind the scenes don't change.
Well, hey, of course there's a difference. One is represented by a donkey, and one is represented by an elephant. Why, that's change you can believe in. Well, let me tell you something, Tim. This past Tuesday, I think, is if it didn't prove anything else, it should have proved to anyone who is absolutely thinking on their feet that your vote doesn't count. These electronic voting machines have wrecked the voting process. Now, voting has always been a tricky deal, and there's always been problems, and there's always been corruption. You know, here in Texas, I still remember as a kid, everybody talking about mysterious Box 13, which got Lyndon Johnson elected to the Senate, put him on the road to the presidency, and there was a huge controversy and scandal over that, and then finally a court said, we want to see the votes and we want to count the votes. And when they all opened Box 13, there was nothing there. All the votes had disappeared, went away, even though the people who had seen them when they were there said that several hundred of them were all in the same handwriting, you know, and were listing people who were known to be dead. So, you know, we've always had problems, but at least then there's court cases. You can eventually get to the box. You can eventually get to the votes or not and realize that it was a fraudulent election. But today it's all in computer. And today there's no paper trail. And today there's no way of telling whether your vote counts or not. And I'm telling you this, in traveling around the country and in talking on so many radio programs and listening to the people calling in, there was a huge backlash in this country. And there was many, many people who did not want to vote for the Democrat or the Republican. They wanted something different. They wanted to show that they, the public was in charge, not the politicians. And yet, when the voting's done, we find, there's 51 for the Democrats and 48 for the Republicans, and, well, nothing in between particularly. Wait a minute. It doesn't make sense. In fact, there was this campaign in Ohio, and man running for the Constitutionalist Party, early on, it showed he had 14% of the vote with 15,000 votes. And then all of a sudden, within an hour, he dropped to 3,000 votes and he lost. You know, he even trailed the Libertarian. What happened to those votes? Where'd they go? Well, they went off into the cyberspace, just went away.
Interesting.
And that's what happens. There's another instance. I'm still looking into this. I'm going to put together a list of all the voting irregularities that took place. And yet we are so dumbed down, we are so pacified, so mollified that, you know, right now I can't think of a single race where anybody is contesting the election.
Yeah.
It's like, well, gee, the computer said it's this, so it must be this. That's wrong, folks. Well, you know, and if you don't have a vote, you don't have anything.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. Well, I guess, like, kind of what I was, to jump back to a little bit of what I was talking about, it seems like under the Bush era, it was a little bit, at least as far as what the people in the conspiracy movement were looking at, you know, and were upset about, was seemed like a a push more towards the police state, and then Obama came in and it seemed like more of a push towards the socialism end of things. Meanwhile, of course, the police state stuff just keeps going on. It's not like he stopped. So it seems like almost, you know, they're pushing their whole agenda in, you know, in alternating, you know, methodologies, if you will. Right. You get what I mean?
Well, Tim, as you well know, because I was on your program during the Bush administration, and it's not like I'm pro-Bush and anti-Obama.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
I'm anti-New World Order, mm-hmm. and the New World Order controls them both. And if you want any more clear example, the Obama campaign on the idea of transparency in government, right? He even said that the vital issues will be broadcast on C-SPAN, and everybody can see what we're doing. Well, that hasn't happened, and in fact, there's more secrecy, more denial of freedom of information request, more secretiveness than in the Bush administration. 64% more rejections of Freedom of Information Act request under the Obama administration than under the Bush administration. So I'm not trying to say Bush was good and Obama's bad. I'm trying to say that as bad as Bush was, Obama has not done any better. In fact, in some instances, has done worse. So again, there's no change.
Yeah, exactly. To look at the economy a little bit, what do you make of this sort of rush? I guess you could call it a gold rush of the last few years. A lot of people are sort of trying to grab as much gold as they can in light of what's going on. Do you think the government's going to step in and confiscate the gold or start trying to, you know, stop this thing from happening?
Well, they're not going to be able to confiscate gold. You know, can you picture trying to bust in doors and goods and saying, give me your gold? You know, they'd tear the place apart looking for that little handful of gold coin. Nah, it ain't going to happen. But what's going to happen is it's already happened before. In the back in the 30s, during the Depression, they outlawed the use of gold for trade and barter and means of exchange. So they'll outlaw it. And you're going to have to go to the Ameros or whatever the heck they're going to call the new money, which they will probably, you know, stack at about, you know, 10 cents on the dollar to what you got. So in other words, you got $100 now, and then when they say, okay, in the current crisis, you know, we got this new money coming in, so you'll have $10 of new money based on your $100. Yeah, it's going to be bad.
Will your debt go down in turn?
Probably not.
Oh,
I mean,
shit.
You know, the money's worth less and less, and yet look at the prices. They just keep going up and up and up.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you what, I think, gold is always a good standby, and gold at some point will always be valuable, but frankly, I think you'd be wiser to invest in tomato seeds.
Interesting. All right.
Hey, you know, if you just think about it, I mean, even the mainstream media was talking about the ugly mood of the country, and they were, you know, predicting this landslide for Republicans, you know, to try to change everything up. And yet Harry Reid's back in, Pelosi's back in. What's changed? Nothing. So either we're all a bunch of idiots or the vote is fraudulent.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, that seems true. And you'd think that by now the third-party candidates would have more of a showing, but... You know,
exactly.
Never seems to be the case.
I can't tell you. The Libertarians have managed to get on the ballot, I think, in every state. And you would think that they would at least come up with 10% of the vote. You know, I'm not going to say they would have won, but, you know, they would have at least had a respectable, negligible. Something's wrong, folks.
Beyond just the mainstream media sort of brainwashing of the two-party system?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Okay. Now,
people wanted something different, and yet we get the same thing. What is that? And this whole thing between Democrat and Republican, the Bush administration, the way you can tell if a politician's lying to you is if his mouth's moving.
Okay?
And I don't say that too facetiously because it's unfortunately a truism. Any politician who's going to tell you the truth probably will never get elected because, you know, if they say, yeah, I'm going to have to increase your taxes, they're not going to get elected.
Exactly.
So they got to say, no new taxes. You know, read my lips, you know. So it's just so you can't trust anything they say. You have to watch what they do. And the classic examples are George W. Bush, Republican, and Barack Hussein Obama, a Democrat. All right. Now, Bush talked a good conservative game, and yet he didn't do any of that. He launched, you know, wars of aggression. He set up torture chambers. My God, when did that come about in America? And he instituted No Child Left Behind, one of the most socialist programs there's ever been. In fact, but here's what throws everybody off, Tim. Everybody thinks of socialism where you're going to take from the wealthy and give to the poor. This is corporate socialism where you take from the poor and you give to the rich. Right?
Yeah.
And that's what throws people off because they go, wait a minute. And so Bush talks conservatism, but he wasn't a conservative. He was a national socialist is what he was.
Yeah.
But, of course, they couldn't use that term because anybody with a sense of history realizes that national socialism is what in the German language, the acronym is Nazi. Okay, so you're not going to vote for a Nazi. So they had to come up with a new term. They came up with neoconservative, a neocon. Okay, well, we got neoconned, all right. And so, and people, though, by 2008 were beginning to kind of catch on. Wait a minute, he says all this, but he's not doing it. We're still fighting these wars. Our economy's going to hell. They've got the bankers are just taking over. You know, they're nationalizing businesses. Oh, wow, let's change. So we got Obama administration, and look what they've done. More socialism. All they've done is shifted us from national socialism to Marxist socialism. And the way they do that is the oldest maneuver in the book. It's the old used car salesman's trick. You know, you're walking along the street, and they grab you, pull you in there, and say, talk to you, good old bus, slap you on the back. Pretty soon it's, hey, do you like the red one or the green one? Well, I kind of like the red one. Okay, well, here, come on in. Let's sign the papers. Wait a minute. I didn't even want to buy a car, you know? So it's like, do you want national socialism or Marxist socialism? Well, wait a minute. What if I don't want socialism at all? What if I want free market capitalism? So, you know, you cannot listen to what they say. You have to watch what they do.
Now, I'm hearing some wind chimes in the background. What, are you outside or something?
Yeah, I stepped out on the porch. It's really beautiful here, Indian summer in Texas.
Sounds nice. It's raining like a sumbitch here, so at least one of us is enjoying the weather.
We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?